Ready, go.
One of the things that I've been doing in these lessons through the summer from Luke has been reading it with an old lens. I used a big word at 8 o'clock. I said hermeneutic. And I just said it again, didn't I? Hermes, the messenger God. So that a hermeneutic task is one that looks for the message in the reading and brings it out, finds the message. That's what hermeneutics are. I love the word. I love big words. But I love that one because one of the things that I do as a preacher now, this is in my 20-plus years, at least the sixth time I have preached from Lessons According to Luke. As the lectionary cycle goes through on a three-year cycle, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Matthew, Mark, Luke. This is at least the sixth time in my life as a preacher where the gospel lessons have come largely from Luke. And I have a lens for reading Luke that is an old lens. And I've used it year after year after year. And you all have heard me talk about it. I think that one of the principal background pieces of Luke's gospel, something that's sort of always in the picture, no matter what the scene is, there is this idea that's undergirding it, that's behind it, and giving the story its shape. And that old lens was the great reversal of fortune, as it's described for us in the Magnificat. Mary's beautiful hymn, her song that basically says, the low will be lifted up and the high will be brought down. And there's this great reversal of fortune. And it's a beautiful thing. And Luke tells that version of things over and over and over again and has Jesus saying things like, the first shall be last and the last shall be first, more often than in the other gospels. So it's there. That's one of the lenses that I have used. There's a second one that I've used over the years, and it is that Luke writes the stories that Luke writes for us so that we can see ahead with them. He foreshadows that more important moment, which is the cross and the resurrection. He's looking ahead to those moments, and how do these individual preliminary events point us toward that, get us headed that way, and most significantly of all, and the place where that's solidly anchored, is when he even says that Jesus turns Jesus' own face toward Jerusalem. And Luke describes Jesus at that point in his life, like none of the other Gospels describe him doing that. He turns his face toward Jerusalem. Even Jesus is in on the foreshadowing, so to speak. And so those are the old lenses that I have used time and time again. I've got a new one. And it comes out of as much last Sunday as this Sunday. But I started using it to look back. I started to use it as a hermeneutic and to look back at some of those lessons of the previous Sundays. And oh my goodness, there it is. Oh my goodness. Now I don't know that that's a confirmation bias. I try to be careful about that sort of thing. Because it's real easy to say that, you know, the Bible's all about one thing and just keep finding it everywhere you go. And when I was a kid living in Anderson, South Carolina, my dad was the pastor of Boulevard Baptist, which was becoming the number two church in town. It was formed by members of First Baptist. And so it was growing and rising into prominence in town. The country club gave our family a complimentary membership. And all we had to do was to pay. There was no initiation fee or anything like that. We just had to eat there once a month in the Sunday buffet thing. We had to do that. And then Dad had to play golf a certain number of times and pay the green fee when he played. And it was a reduced rate, but still, that was pretty much of the deal back then. And so he got a hold of a set of golf clubs for me. I was 10 years old, so I was kind of small. He got a hold of a secondhand set of clubs for me, and off we went to the golf course. And the golf course in Anderson's on the west side of town. And I know you all know Anderson, South Carolina well. It's an old cotton mill town, like so many, a textile mill town, like so many of the towns in upstate South Carolina. And so it's really lots of little mill villages all sort of conglomerated around a courthouse. And the golf course was on the west side of town, so you had to go through some of these now failing communities because the textile industry was already waning in the 50s and 60s. It was already on its way out. And so these neighborhoods were run down and stuff. And they were the sort of neighborhoods my mom would say, make sure you lock the door and roll the window up, kind of thing, you know, because something's going to get in, you know, something bad's going to seep into the car as you go by. So there we are on our way to the golf course, going through one of these older neighborhoods. And it was the first time in my life that I'd ever seen one of those portable signs. And back then it was the big ones with the arrow that would shoot across the top and the black letters. But it was being used by a church. Now, all the other church signs I'd ever seen were very stately and regular and rectangular and black on the background and little white letters, you know, that sort of thing with the service schedule in the bottom and all that kind of stuff. Very dignified. This one was like, wah! Right in front of me like that. And the building that was behind it, though, was a ramshackle little cinder block building. I mean, this was a space that had been taken over by a fledgling congregation, and their preacher got hold of one of them signs and put it out there in front because we want people to know we're here. And my dad, without flinching as we drove by, I mean, he did not even turn to look. Just nothing. My dad said, sign probably says something about blood. It did. Washed in the blood. Did you hear washed in the blood from Isaiah today in the reading? That's where some of that comes from. But that was that preacher's constant hermeneutic. That was what he always saw when he looked at the Bible, was being washed in the blood. Every Sunday in, Sunday out. You got to be washed in the blood. And that was what that guy preached on every Sunday. The sign hardly ever changed. And stuff. And so I remember that so clearly, so vividly. And when I think about my own life as a hermeneutic practitioner, well, that's two big words, careful. I want to be mindful of that. I don't want to look at the Bible and just see the same thing every time I do. And we can do that. So my new lens is this, that there is something about immediacy that the gospel is built on. There's something about God being with us now that the gospel is built on. If you look at Luke with that great reversal of fortune, all you got to do is just wait until your day comes, until you win the lottery or whatever it is, right? And it turns faithfulness into this game against others, which is not a real healthy way to be faithful. And if you use that lens that is this foreshadowing lens, then again, you're sort of deferring to a later time, the culmination. You know, God's effort's not really finished yet, but boy, one day. And so you live waiting for the sweet by and by to come. But these lessons that we've had these previous Sundays and today say something to me about how God is present with us now. And if the owner of the house had known when the thief was coming, he wouldn't have let his house be broken into. And then Jesus pops up and goes, I'm back. You see what I mean? I think Jesus is the thief that breaks in to our houses. And we've got all kinds of houses for Jesus to break into. If you use that Old Testament lesson, you hear about one of those houses. It's the one that is so consumed with its own pomp and circumstance, it forgets what it's there for. You know, it sounds almost like Amos, I despise your solemn assemblies, right? It has that ring to it, doesn't it? And what God says is, I'll take care of things. I'm doing the laundry. I'm cleaning things up. I'll make it right. And so there's something about immediacy here that is not a comforting thing. But isn't that the case? Don't we live our lives as if, like Martin Smith criticizes, don't we live our lives as if somehow we can have conversations with each other that God's not already in on?
Don't we talk to each other as if somehow God's waiting for us to finish that conversation and then get a report from us and then to act on the report of that conversation? What I learned from Martin Smith was this. You can't have a conversation
without God being in on it. The way he said it was, you can't talk behind God's back. The thief's already in the house. Why are we acting like something else is going on? He's here now. That's immediacy to me. Think about Mary sitting at Jesus' feet just a couple of Sundays ago, and Martha complaining from the kitchen, you know, get her to help me. But what Mary is doing is acting out that devotion that comes from recognizing God's presence right there, right then. And Mary has chosen the better part. And then last Sunday, you fool, what made you think that Barnes was how I work? I need you now. And your Barnes, we don't even know who they're going to be. There's something about immediacy in these lessons that says that God is not setting up a system for us to work our way through, either by being good worshipers, and we're good worshipers, or by somehow taking on responsibility and making these efforts that will give us some sort of pride later on that look what we did. God is already in on this conversation. The thief is already in the house. I need you now. Mary has chosen the better part. Why do we keep acting like there's something left to happen? But we do, don't we? Maybe it's just hard to get up in the morning and admit it, that God's already in on things. Now, sometimes we wake up hungry. Sometimes we wake up tired. Sometimes we can't go to sleep. Sometimes the day grinds on us for whatever reason. But I feel like that in every single one of those moments, if we would just admit that God is already in the room, every single one of those would be better too. But we keep putting God out of the house somehow, or acting like we've got to do some housekeeping before he comes. God loves us, you guys. That's why God's already in on it. The thief's in the house. I never thought that was good news until now. So I'm going to look at things differently from this point on, best I can. I got to tell you something. I'm already giddy like a little kid, because Martin Smith is coming to the clergy conference in September. You are not going to be able to stand me for the next 4 or 5 Sundays after that. God's already with us. Thanks be to God. Amen. Let's stand together now.